You're listening to Have Mike Will Travel with Elizabeth Santry.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. Welcome to the show. This podcast is about creativity, the professional aspects of creativity. Well, you could also say it's about creative thinking. You see, a career in a creative profession typically means carving your own path and making a lot of important decisions alone. And when competition is fierce and the market's uncertain, getting firsthand insight can really help. Join me as I interview full-time creative professionals and ask them to reflect on these really important moments in their career. Each episode, my guests open up about significant and sometimes even subtle choices that have led to their success. I know it can feel lonely out there, so I hope you find their stories as inspiring as I do. That's the sound of my train ride ascending from Sydney all the way up to Blackheath. This episode was recorded in the Blue Mountains of Australia. My train journey was this amazing excuse to visit this beautiful place given to me by my guest, Julie Patterson, from Cloth Fabric. I think this episode is particularly special because Julie was the first guest I was able to book for my whole Australian tour, and her brilliance and her warmth and her talent really helped set the tone for the guests I booked going forward. She invited me up to her workspace in her home, which is fantastically decorated in mid-century collectibles and a lot of her art everywhere. She works out of a shed on her property, and it's cozy and bright and full of life. It's really nice to listen to someone talk about their process who's so deeply committed to their work, as well as just who they are as a person. She's so true to herself, true to her craft. I thought she was really empowering. She lives her own vision, and she's also a fantastic host. I hope you enjoy this episode. Oh, Julie, thank you so much for having me. This is the kind of show that makes it really worthwhile, and I almost feel like it's less work than anything to get to come to somewhere like this.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. I mean, it's incredible what you've done to your space, but also the space at large, the Blue Mountains. It's just so lovely. Mm. I mean, obviously, you have to have a creative connection to this place. Like, tell me about that.
I do. I didn't realize when I first moved here about 11 or so years ago, I think. My partner at the time, Beck, she told me about the Blue Mountains. I hadn't really been here. I was a girl that was obsessed with the ocean. And so when Beck came up here to look for houses, she bought this little place. And I came up and I thought, oh, my God. It's so great. It's like England, because I come from the UK, mm-hmm. and it's chillier here than it is in the city, and there's not so much humidity, and I couldn't believe it. I could sleep at night in the summer, and it was all great, rather than down on the coast, you know, it's a restless sleep normally. Anyway, so Beck found this little house, and I found that I could, the moment I walked out of the car, walked up the driveway, I was focused on work.
Wow.
Focused. I just couldn't stop working the moment I first walked through the gates of this house. Yeah, so it's all about being in nature, because it's all around me, but I'm in, you know, I've got the shed all the way through the winter. I keep the shed doors open. Oh, and wow. I'm working with a beanie on, no heating or anything. And it gives me such a clarity of mind and a focus of intent. I'm just here to work, and yeah, that's what I do.
And also you do have a business in Sydney.
I do. I do, yes.
And so, because the show tends to be very specific, site-specific, mm-hmm. and I think that you could probably have loads to talk about site-specific work. I mean, so I'm traveling, and I mainly with the focus on Sydney, Melbourne, but you touch down in Sydney, you have a work, but then you expand also to the mountains.
Yeah, so I've had the business in Sydney for 20 years now. It's a textile design business, so I design and manufacture. Well, how it pans out now is I design up here because it gives me the clarity of headspace. I find it convenient that the phone has difficulty finding reception. It's quite good that I can dodge calls if I feel like it. in the city, I can't. I'm bombarded with all sorts of stuff, and I just don't have that the space in your mind, you know, just to stick with an idea. If you have an idea and you just want to see it through, it's rare. It's rare to have a length of time that you can just keep working without interruptions. Up here, that's the essence of it. I can work without interruptions. But, you know, to have a business, you need to have an audience. So the biggest audience is in the city. And I've had a shop down there for closing. The shop last year, but up until then it was about 19 years worth of retail. And my thing originally was all about having a little tiny shop in the area that I lived in, Clovelly, that people could see me doing the work in the shop itself. Now we're talking now about 15 or so years ago, where people didn't do that. You know, it's like taking the kids to the market or to the farm and see the cows being milked.
Yeah.
So many children don't get that opportunity to understand that process. And so I knew years ago when I first started my business, being a craftsperson, that the value really from a marketing perspective, I didn't have a budget to put on my marketing, but I had a voice and I could speak and I could demonstrate and I could show the people what I was doing. And so
it's
I
really
did. That's what I did, yeah. And so I found this little shop and I set most of it up as my print table. And all my stock was on the walls around the edges. It was a tiny little shop, and so quite often the stock would get splattered with print paste. But that was good because it was adding to the uniqueness of the pattern. And so I would just be there working away. And I thought I'd have my shop open maybe a couple of days a week, and the rest of the time I'd be working. But people would be, when the shop was shut, they'd be really indignant. The shop was shut, so they'd leave me little notes under the door saying, when are you open? What are you doing?
Wow.
Yeah, so I ended up being open 6 days of the week, and on the seventh day, that's when I did my printing. So
wow.
7 days a week.
You're really ahead of the game because I feel like they call it now like experience.
Yeah.
Marketplaces.
Yeah.
Have become really huge for people to, and yet you were creating experience ages ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I've run my business on a shoestring budget forever. I thought when I first started the business, I thought it was going to last 6 months, and that's in 1995.
Why?
Why? Because I'm not a business person or not. I'm not an entrepreneur. I guess I am lucky enough to be able to take risks and just, well, take risks as in I want to do something and I'm just going to try it out. I'm just going to try it out. It's going to, in my mind, it's just a try, you know. It's not, I'm not banking everything. It's not my entire career on this idea. And so it's just built from there. I'm just trying this. What about if I did that? Or what if I did this and that? So it was just one step at a time trying something new out.
Do you think that perspective has helped you? Because it sounds like you don't internalize failure so deeply and harshly if your intention was only just to play and enjoy or try something out.
That's absolutely true, yeah. The most important thing for me in my life is to feel creatively fulfilled and to have a modest lifestyle. It's not about making loads of money. It's not about power. It's not about world domination. So often, when I say the world...
Were you ever close to world domination?
No. What I mean by that, I know, it's quick to qualify what I meant by that. So many people, from the outset, other people might say, oh, your business is very successful. You must be exporting around the world. You must have a string of shops around the world. And I say, my business is successful, but I don't have a string of shops around the world. I do export, but it's on a one-by-one basis. It's not like I've got this big exporting business, and that's how I want it. I want to keep it small and manageable so I can go up to the mountains for a couple of days and not answer my phone if I feel like it. I did have 7 staff before, so it was a little easier than it is now. But it's about quality of life. And I think I was lucky enough to have parents that said to me when I was a kid, do what you want. As long as you get an education, do what you want with it. And I have.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately for them, it's on the other side of the world, so they don't get to see me very often and I don't get to see them that much. But that's the most important thing to me. It's feeling creatively fulfilled every single day. And if I feel like doing something spontaneously off plan, I will.
Mm-hmm.
Other people have difficulty with my off-planness, but you know, you stick to a plan. It's kind of good for people around you when you've got a plan and you stick to it. I'm not very good at making plans or sticking to them.
Well, I think a theme that comes up often, I try to answer some questions through my guests and their insight, answer some questions that might be at large. And I think deciding where to live or where to go or how to find your people or how to, like, you stumbling upon a space where you automatically felt productive, that's really just so lucky and amazing. But what was the decision process to leave the UK and to come to Australia? Because I think a lot of artists need to understand what was the deciding factor.
Yeah, I have no overarching plan, but it was, so I did my degree in the mid-80s, and then I went and did a postgraduate teaching because my mum said to me, don't rely on your art, get a fallback. She wanted me to do typing, and I was like, I can't possibly do that. I will do teaching. So I did a postgrad teaching in London. That was all good. It made me realize how much of a designer I needed to be, not a teacher, because teaching is really, really hard. Mm. And so then I got a job in London as a textile designer. Really great job. It's all good. But it was the mid to late 80s, I think. Yeah, 87, 88. And Margaret Thatcher. It's a political move. The country felt depressed. And I had a job, and it was a good job. But I just thought, there must be more to life. I need to do some traveling. Because I went from straight from my degree to my postgraduate to my job. And so a whole bunch of friends were traveling around Asia and New Zealand. And there was talk of Australia. And about 8 of us eventually came over here on the holidays just for a year. And they're all still here. Apart from the one that went to the States and is now a different story. But the rest of us, yeah, we're all still here. We've all set our own businesses up and created in the area that we trained in, every single one of us.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. It is. It's quite unusual, I think. And so a whole bunch of my friends were still here. Why would I go back? And my mum was saying, you're having a nice time. I go, yeah. She said, you stay for a bit longer. And I went, okay.
Getting your permission, and you're like, I've already decided.
And so, yeah, it kind of happened like that, really. And I just realized this country's, the landscape here is just remarkable. And coming from the UK, it's just nothing like it.
Right.
And I'm a country girl, you know. I was born and raised in lots of dairy cows and apple trees and fields. I used to run around in the fields, you know, all that kind of stuff. There's a semblance of that still here now. And I don't think in the UK it's so easy for kids to be as connected to the land as I was when I was growing up, but certainly you are here. It's so much easier to maintain that kind of lifestyle.
What I really appreciate is from my observation of other cultures, their attitude towards travel. I mean, that is a real big running theme in the show, and I think it's so fulfilling in different ways to different people, but I love that was, I'm assuming that the traveling time that you had, you weren't like out there pioneering the concept. Other people before you in generations, traveling is a thing to experience life, and it led you to this.
Mm.
And that kind of openness to not knowing what you're going to find, and then look what you found.
Yeah.
In the life. It's really incredible.
Yeah. Funny though, my family, my father's Scottish from Glasgow. He had a difficult life and he traveled to England, which is, you know, it's not that far when you compare it to Australia. But for a 15-year-old kid, big deal. But my mum, she lives in the same town that she was born, and I was born in that town too, and all her family are all still there. So it's very small town mentality. Beautiful, lovely, gorgeous people, but none of them travel really, not to the extent that I have. And I was the first one out of many, many cousins to have further education. And my sister followed suit, but it's that kind of slightly old-fashioned village life kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they're all happy. It's not, I'm not criticizing that,
right,
but for me it was no good. That's not what I wanted. And I told my mother at the age of 5, I'm not going to get married, I'm not having kids, that's fine, love. She was so good. She was so good to me, my mother. So she kind of allowed me to go without giving me a hard time, and that's why I'm here, I think. And it's all about risk, but it doesn't feel risky, you know. I just feel like I'm able to try one thing at a time. And each day offers a new opportunity. That's how I see it, really.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying is interesting, because I think when people want to take some risk, and like you said, it might not even feel like a risk to them, but their community, their support system is saying, like, how can you even consider doing that? But I think, and they don't know whether or not to go forward with it or not, this fork in the road kind of scenario. And I think you sort of described it well, when it, as if it doesn't feel like a risk to you. You know, and then, because look what it fulfilled. Look what it presented.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing. You said something interesting early on about not really identifying as an entrepreneur, but you are. And so I was wondering if you could talk to me a little bit about, because you were on some stuff about not identifying, and I think you might be about to describe, like, how to be an artist in business. And I think you probably have loads to say, and I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, okay. So, again, going back to the UK and Margaret Thatcher, one of the things that I'm a product of a generation that in the UK that said, you know, you can't be an artist because you don't make any money being an artist. You have to be a designer. No, no, you have to just not be an artist. And so I thought, well, the nearest thing to that could be possibly a designer. Textile design seemed the most creative. Looking back retrospectively, my long-term trajectory has always been to be an artist. And I'm there now, having, you know, been practicing for a long time. But my way into that was to be a designer because I realized that as a designer, you are applying your skills to a marketplace. Maybe artists might feel the same way too, and I probably do a bit, but it's a little bit more, a little bit less prescriptive, isn't it? You're exploring your own process without any obvious ends to the plan. But with the design, you know, you create a brief. You think of your marketplace. And so I have an instinct for that anyway. I naturally can't help myself, but I see opportunity all over the place. I don't see myself as an entrepreneur because I'm not strategic enough. I don't think I'm not objective enough in my process. I'm very subjective, and I'm not criticizing myself about that, but it's
no, you're being honest. Yeah, I think that what you're like, you have a lot of important things to say, and I'm going to bookmark that one.
Yeah.
When it comes to people trying to identify and figure out and where they belong and what to do and they want to start a business, just knowing who you really are, knowing what you can really offer.
Yeah, knowing your strengths. So the first person I employed. So I had this idea, you know, I came to Australia and I saw that nobody was referencing the Australian landscape or the flora and fauna in their designs. They were looking overseas. This was 20 years ago. They were looking overseas for their inspiration. And I was thinking, this place is amazing. You know, why is everyone in textiles? Why is everyone furnishing their homes with European-looking flowers and things? It's like, didn't make sense to me. So I did stick my neck out. It was a sticking out of the neck at that stage. But I was young, and so, you know, I had no money, so there was nothing to lose. So I thought, well, let's give it a go. So we started designing textiles that were completely related to the Australian marketplace for the local market. And so the instinct is there for me, but I didn't know how we were going to pay for it. So the first person that we employed was a bookkeeper. Because when the going gets tough, I avoid my mailbox. My physical mailbox, right, where all the bills sit. And so you can't do that in business. You really need to get those bills paid. And one of the best bits of advice I've ever been given, and I always give to people, is pay your suppliers on time, because when you need something from them, you've got a good reputation or relationship with them, and they will look after you. So that's number one in that's business, good, pay your suppliers on time.
For sure.
And respect them. Yeah. And which we did that. And so my bookkeeper, I love and adore Carla. She's still with me, even though I don't have so much of a business anymore as I did. But she still opens my bills for me. She still has a little plan of attack.
That's awesome.
I'm really rubbish at that. But that's cool. You know your strengths. That's what it's about, because then you can keep going and it's all good.
And this other thing that you did, which is might sound so simple and sounds like common sense, the way you observed what this market needed and what it was missing. You didn't have to work hard at it. It sounded like it was just this obvious epiphany of common sense that why aren't people buying their own, you know, imagery wise. And that didn't have to cost you anything, that insight. And yet you listened to yourself and look what it's done. Because now you are a person who's seen on the sidelines the development of design in Australia.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I have. So what do you have to say about like what you've seen develop from what you've were initially a part of developing, and now you can sit back and look at what do you
I thoughts? Think well, the Australian design industry is, I see it now as like a teenager. It's leaving home now, whereas when I first started it was like a baby, an infant, and it really needed nurturing, and it did get nurtured. And I was one of the first people to be in that little creche, those infants. The thing that we did, I think I'm answering a previous question really, but it's a key thing that I really want to say, that is I do a lot of market research, but I do it on the ground. I ask people their opinions all the time about my work, all the time. So that's why I had a shop. I think I'm going off your question, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's good advice.
So before I set the business up with a friend from college, Penny, originally, and before we even had a name for the business, we decided we'd do a trade fair. And this is the nurturing of that Australian design thing, is that these big trade fairs had small little pods where for not much money new designers could come in and rent the space. And so we'd done 6 months of experimenting and, you know, painting on silk and screen printing on velvet and dyeing hemp, which is the thing that people really responded to. And we had all this fabric all in this tiny wee little 2x2 meter space, where for some reason a giant rusty bowl taking up all our floor space with mm-hmm. lentils in it. I don't know why we did that, but the floor was electric blue, so it looked really good. Okay. But we could hardly walk in on our space. But anyway, so we just showed all these fabrics that we'd done for 6 months and to the trade, architects and designers, and just picked their brains to see what they liked. And we got a really accurate response that set us up for the next 20 years. And that was to hand dye and print upholstery weight hemp and linen with contemporary edgy designs that had a story to about the Australian landscape. Mm-hmm. And that's still what we do now.
Mm-hmm. I think you probably would have a great insight about knowing the timing to make change, the timing to take on new things or say goodbye to old things. I think transition can be difficult for anyone. It doesn't have to be specific to creativity. And what do you use in your mindset to help you guide decision-making about ending something, beginning something new?
Well, I've done a lot of therapy, and I think that really, really helps.
Yeah,
and sure. I meditate, and my painting practice is a meditation, and I just don't get too distracted. I come up here and I sit with no music, no nothing. I just sit here and listen to the birds and draw. And your own voice, it's there. You know, it's all inside you. You've got the wisdom. It is there. It's just recognizing or tuning into hearing what those words are. And like, I have struggled these last 2 years. It's not all been fantastic. You know, a 20-year business has its ups and downs. Overall, it's been...
Excuse me. Sorry.
That's all right.
That's the nature.
Overall, it's been amazing. But a couple of years ago, I was starting to notice that I was not socializing. I wasn't going out because people would always ask me, "How's the business going? How's it?" And I would be struggling. I'd be, "Oh, you're going to sneeze again."
Yeah, sorry. I always do pairs. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's all right. People, you know, as they do, always ask you how the business is going, and I started losing focus on the business. You're going to do a third sneeze, I can see.
I might, but I don't mean to interrupt
you
at all.
and I knew that I was losing energy for it. And so I think I kind of came into myself. I stopped going out socially so much, and I just stayed in my studio, and I was working really, really hard with my and managing my staff more than designing. And one day, it was literally a year ago today, eventually I woke up first day back, because in Australia you have a month where you don't, it's summer holidays and, you know, after Christmas, and that's my first day back at work on something like the 24th of January or something. And I thought, I can't do this any longer. I had to make that call. And it was kind of, it felt like it was coming behind me, and I was noticing my behavior around that, you know, not going out and chatting to friends about the business. And then I thought, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. I really think I want to shut the business. And so that's when I thought, maybe there's another, you know, that's an extreme behavior. So maybe if I step back a bit and looked at the other options. And so I started talking to people in the industry and asked them what they would do. And it kind of pointed towards this thing of, well, hand the business over, hand the hard bits over to somebody else. And I thought, okay, I could do that. Yeah. And so I started talking to these guys that I knew already, David and John. I've known them for years, and they are now running my business for me. I still own the business, but I do all the designing, and they do all the stuff that they're good at, which is, you know, holding stock and costings and getting it out to market and distributing it around the country. And I get to do all the designing.
Such great problem solving. You got to the root of what you wanted to do and you listened to yourself. Mm,
I think you just have to face what is inside you already. And people tend to get distracted and they run from it. People run from themselves quite often, I think. And if you can still yourself and just lean into the fear, lean into the problem as Pema Chodron. I don't know if you know Pema Chodron. She's a Buddhist monk.
Okay. Oh, actually, you know what? Yeah.
Yeah. And she says, lean into it. Lean into the pain. Lean into the fear. And so...
Lean in is often a used expression for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly what you're talking about.
And so that's what I did. That's what I do. There's a point at which there's an avoidance, a certain amount of avoidance, i.e., you know, looking at your mailbox and not looking at your bills. But if someone's managing that and you can't avoid... There's some things you just can't avoid, and that's that internal voice, and it's there. Your wisdom is there within you. You just got to watch it.
It's interesting. It just popped into my mind what you're describing about leaning in is that I think there's like a form of martial arts where... I think it's jiu-jitsu. There's no real weaponry. It's about getting as close to the other person, the potential problem, and you're actually minimizing what that problem can do to you.
Mm.
I think the more distance you create, the bigger blow it can strike.
That's, yes, absolutely. That's a good visual, yeah, yeah.
So I also love picking your brain about your process in your work. What makes your process unique?
There's never a point at which it stops, really. Like, I'm just looking here right now at these three paintings on the... They're a project that's going back to go down to Sydney. And, you know, I had an exhibition about 6 months ago of these, for instance, and I'm now looking at them again, just as you asked me that question, and I'm going, I could make a textile out of that.
Okay.
You know, and then once the textile's done, I might make a painting out of that textile. It just goes on and on and on. And so I see opportunity everywhere that I am, and I carry a sketchbook with me all the time. I don't know if my process is unique. Generally, it's unique to me because it's my process, but it's just about keeping that pencil in your hand, keeping that paintbrush close at hand, and keeping on recording what you see.
Yeah, for sure. And so the book, you know, is that, I don't know if you, is this the first, or is you have multiple books?
No, I'm a, as they call it, a debut author.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that until the other day. A debut author, sounds quite cool. And it's my first book, but I've always wanted to write a book, and the publishing company approached me, which was great.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They said to me, have you ever thought about writing a book? And I said, yes, I have, and I want to write this. And they went, no, don't write that, write this. And so I've got a second book in me.
Awesome. So there debut.
Yeah, the first book is about the business, Clothbound it's called. So it's very much steeped in the process and showing the beginning, middle and end of the collections that I've done over the years. But the next book I want to do is again about process, but it's more about place, site-specific place. So I've just done a month's artist residency at West in a place called Hill End, which is an old gold mining town from the 1850s that's still being lived in by about 100 people, most of them artists. Most of them artists, some of them just are there because they want to get away from society to a certain extent. And I was intrigued by that. And the houses are all made of tin and wattle and daub, and they look like they're completely falling down, but people live inside them. And they're amazing. It's an amazing place. So I would like to document that. I already have started writing a blog around that, about how it is for an artist to go into a new place, gather your information and what comes from that experience, and the designs that, or paintings or whatever it is that I produce from that. I want to document all of that. Yeah. That'll be my next book about site-specific processes and creativity.
Will it have the same writing style? Because I did get to flip through your debuting book, and I love the layman kind of attitude and approach.
Yes, yes, it will.
I think that's important.
It is important, and that for me was a key thing for the business. Is I don't want to ever. I like people to feel included, my customers to feel included, like they own the fabric that I produce, because I'm producing it for them, you know. I'm producing it for myself, but I'm producing a product for somebody to make curtains or upholstery with. And I really don't like that difference or the division between us and them. It's like, you could do this. Maybe not to the way I would do it, but you could. You know, everyone's born creative. You know, I really believe that we were all, as kids, we were all creative. So to keep it as really a simple language, accessible language that feels like, you know, I'm a friend, you know, we're all together in this life, that's really important to me.
I mean, you've nailed majority of the reason that I'm doing this podcast. It's to create the sensation of connection, to remind us, you know, that there's differences, but that we're all in this together. I think that's super important. I think you've been a superb guest. I really appreciate show. I mean, also the hospitality, and I've also made a new best friend in your dog.
Harry.
But is there a place where the book can be found?
Yes, there is. I can't think what that is off the top of my head right now, but yes, there is. Well, at most bookshops around the place.
So please don't feel any pressure. Okay. I just wanted to give people the knowledge that there's a product out there. They can hear more about this tone of voice and this perspective that you have.
Yeah.
A wealth of understanding, knowledge that you seem so willing to share. Mm. And that's what makes this experience so nice. And
great.
I really appreciate your
hospitality. That's all right. That's great. I'll find out where the book can be sold in the States. This is not necessarily just a stateswide
thing.
No,
I'm hoping.
It's going around the world, isn't it?
Picture. Yeah. So I don't know if Amazon or the typical routes that Americans go, but I want it to be accessible to a larger crowd. So wherever it is that they're sold, I'll try to make an effort to make that clear.
Okay, cool. Might well be Amazon, who knows?
Yeah, cool. Well, hopefully.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to show your support through comments and reviews.